Your Bibles, open the fourth chapter of Proverbs. We have gone through the first four verses in chapter four in the book of Proverbs. And what we're dealing with here in Proverbs is the authority and the position of the father in the home. And I've also been using a little bit of Bill Gothard material, if you've ever been to any of his seminars, as to the responsibility of the father and mother in the home. And let me just read those four verses again. I'll make a little bit of comment, and then we want to get moving, because we've already kind of gone through all of these verses. Hear ye, children, the instruction of the father, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also, and said unto me, Let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live. The essence of the four verses is that it is the father's responsibility to give instruction, not the mother's. The mother is to assist and aid, after the instruction has been given, to see that these precepts are carried on. I think that's probably one of the biggest breakdowns in our family unit, is that the woman has always given the instruction in the family. And that's not the way God set it up. The man is to give the instruction. We have a daughter that's out of sorts right now. Okay. Sometimes the man has had the idea that he's the breadwinner, and if he does the providing and makes the final decision, that has released him of his responsibility toward the family. But as the Bible is concerned, as the Bible gives us instruction, it says the father is to give the instruction. And in verse 4, when we talked about it again, it said, He taught me also and said unto me. So he didn't just give him instruction, but he taught him. And what's the best teacher? Okay, but when you're teaching someone else, what is your best vehicle? Experience and example. Experience and example. Okay, but does it mean that if you give them proper teaching and they've had proper instruction and they choose other things, does that mean you failed? That's very good. They have a free will. They can choose to obey. They can choose to fall under that instruction. And I had a conversation this morning with one of my daughters, and we were talking about this very thing of the authority of the father in the home. And I'm in the fourth chapter of Proverbs, on the fourth verse. And we were talking, and if the children do not fall under, if the father is submitting to God in the home, and the children do not fall under his instruction, that they rebel against his instruction, then God's blessing is not on their life. Okay? Anytime that you are in submission to God, men, as priest of your home, and you are asking God for direction, and your children choose not to follow the direction that's been given and instruction that's been received from God, then God's blessing is not on those children, because they are in rebellion to God's plan. And there's some interesting things. I'm in the fourth chapter of Proverbs, and I'm the fourth verse here. We have talked about the authority of the father. In that fourth verse, it says that the father is to be the instructor in the home. The mother is to aid and assist the instructions that the father gives. And men, if you are not the instructor in your home, then you are not taking your place as priest of your home. But men, you can't just give instruction. You have to submit yourself to God and get your direction from God. And this is with tongue in cheek. But it's very serious. Men, if you're submitting to God, you are setting an example for every member of your family. And if you submit to God and you get your instruction from God, your wife will automatically submit to your authority. Because we were created to submit. And a woman will automatically do that. But if you're not submitting to God and getting instruction and fulfilling your priestly responsibilities in the family as spiritual leader of that home, then your wife will rebel against your authority, and she will take that authority, because women will not let their house go down the drain. Okay? And when she is in authority in the home, we have strife and rebellion, because that's not God's plan. And some men will say, well, my wife just took over the place. I wouldn't even attempt that with my husband. I have too much respect for him. I'm a strong personality. Hey, I have to admit that. I have some ideas, and contrary to what you may believe, sometimes they're different than his. And we want to talk about these things. But I know he submits to God, and I would never challenge his direction or instruction in our home. I might say to him and look him straight in the eye and say, did you hear from God? Is this what God told you to do? If he tells me yes, I back off. Because I know if I resist him, God's blessing will not be on my life. If you're a single parent and you have the responsibility in the home, then God ordains you for that responsibility when you are a single parent. Okay, what about, and I want to let you know that some of this material is taken from Bill Goffer's seminar, so you know where some of this is coming from. What happens if the husband has not been the spiritual priest of the home, and he's just kind of let that thing ride, and he's not the one giving the instruction in the home, and he comes to a realization, maybe, that this is my responsibility, and he decides he'd like to do it, but he said, I can't. I failed. Too much water's gone under the bridge. A man who fails is not a failure. And when I saw this isn't the first time I've taught this, but when I saw this unfolded in the scriptures, I thought, God, you really do have it under control. This is so neat, what I'm going to share with you here. A man who gives up is a failure. God promises beauty for ashes. Beauty for ashes. God promises that. He does allow us to fail when we try to succeed in our own strength. His most powerful illustration in the Bible about this is David. David failed God, but he was not a failure. He had a desire to build a great temple. Okay, now let's see what happens for God. But because of his failure, God did not allow him to build that temple. But he did allow him a part of the ministry. He got to lay all the plans. Now, David was a good father because his son, Solomon, caught his vision. Even though David failed God and did some terrible, awful things, he passed his vision on to his children, and they received it, and they went on. Were they perfect? No. Solomon built the temple and fulfilled his father's dream. So God still accomplished. The original dream was meant for David to build the temple. And if he hadn't failed God, God would have let him do that. But remember, the Israelites didn't get to the promised land. Moses didn't get to the promised land because he failed God. That wasn't God's original plan. But he did let them be victorious. So the main goal is never altered. people alter the way we get there. And sometimes it gets retarded and it gets laid off and it gets put on the back burner for 30 years. But the goal will happen. God's plan will prevail, even in the church. It says, the gates of hell shall not prevail against my church. I don't care what people will in this congregation. God's will be done in the end. He will be glorified. He will be manifested in spirit and truth. It may take a little longer, and he may have to choose some other people to carry it out, but it will happen. But you know, sometimes we don't really get the value of our mistakes. The original temple was absolutely breathtaking. And then the nation sinned. And God destroyed the temple. But God is merciful. When they repented, he allowed them to rebuild it. But it wasn't nearly as magnificent as the original plan. We get so busy and so self-willed. You know, God is really patient. He is really patient. He still manifests himself in you, even though as Christians we can be in a state of rebellion against God if you're not with him. If you're not flowing the same direction he's flowing, then you're resisting him. There is no middle of the road. We either flow or we resist. Failure leaves scars, but these scars can be turned into glory for our sons and daughters. If we're sitting here and say, I've made some failures. What am I saying if? We all sit here and say, I've done some failures in my life. Will I miss now what God wanted me to do? Don't lose sight of your goal no matter where you are, because God is going to turn it into glory somehow in your life and some way. Disobedience always results in great loss and regret. 2020 hindsight. When you look back at that situation, don't you have great wisdom? Isn't it wonderful how you can see? Well, why couldn't you see that when you were there? Because you weren't really asking God at that moment. In the last 5 years of our life, I have been made so aware of the self-will in myself. I'm a do-or-die person. Once I've made a commitment, I hang in there. My toes may be pushing up lilies, but I've died for the cause. We need to make commitments, but we need to get direction from God. Your goal may be right. That may be, God said he'd give us our dreams. He'd give us our desires. But you got to do it his way. And sometimes God just doesn't work fast enough for us. Children tend to adopt their father's values. If his chief thing is temporal, material, that will be their first focus. Sometimes they will take a totally opposite value of their father because they didn't like what their father stood for. So they will choose something totally opposite. They will either be in the same vein or they will pick something totally opposite. And it gave an example here that I thought was kind of neat. If a father is overly concerned about retirement, his son may be slothful on the basis that if retirement is so important, he will beat his father to it. I had to meditate on that. If retirement is so important, I think I'll just retire before I start. And I never thought how the actions are more, I mean, I know this, I've said this, but actually visualizing it in circumstances, actions are so much louder than words. There was a family in another state a number of years ago that really illustrates this. You name any vehicle for relaxation or anything that was made for entertainment for a family, this family had. And they had it first. When it first hit the market, they would have whatever it was. And they were kind of the envy of the congregation because they had everything. They had a boat, they had three cars in the garage, and they had the hot tub and the swimming pool and all the new little gadgets. And a lot of people thought, it'd be really nice to have all that stuff. The father was totally committed on providing for his family to the tune of working 3 jobs. He couldn't be in church on Sunday morning because he was working. Couldn't be in church on Sunday night because he was working. Maybe once a month he got there. Maybe once every 3 months he got there on a Wednesday night. Came in late and left early because of his job. What was he telling his family? Where was his priority? In things. So when his kids grew up and got married, they adopted the same set of values. They worked 2 and 3 jobs to provide all these things for their family, and church really wasn't all that important to them until a family crisis. They found their way to our office, and they didn't know why. That's one side of the street. The other side of the street is, I've done everything I know to do. I've been obedient. I put God first in my life. And my children still made wrong choices. And the devil comes, thrum, 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 thrum. Guilt. Guilt. And there is a difference between men and women when it comes to guilt. Let me give you an example. If there was a chair sitting in the middle of the room, and a man walked by the chair and he tripped on it, he would say, "That stupid chair got in my way." If a woman walked by and tripped on the chair, she would say, "Oh, I'm so clumsy." She received the guilt immediately. Women walk around, they go, "Yoo-hoo, baby, guilt, over here, here I am." They're looking for an opportunity to carry this load. And men absolutely refuse to accept it. They will escape it. They will run. We're dealing with a variable that we cannot control. Free will. But if you lay down all the right teachings, David did. Solomon was taught. Solomon even fulfilled his father's dream. But Solomon lost in the end. It was his own fault. It was his own choice. He chose what he got. Moving into verse 5, Solomon is talking to his son. He is telling him what is important in life. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Forget it not. Neither decline from the words of my mouth. What's he saying here? He's saying that wisdom is number one commodity. That's what you need to put all your energies toward. And in the Greek and the Hebrew, it even tells you that he's telling him to get this because you need to possess it because it's so valuable. He's putting emphasis on this, wisdom and understanding. It's kind of like horse and carriage. You can't really have one without the other. If you have wisdom, you will get understanding. It will follow through experience. Wisdom are put forward as objects of merchandise, and we need to acquire them for ourselves. We need to possess them. It says, forget not. That means that you preserve in your mind these things. You work at keeping it here. How many have a good memory in this class? I want to know. I want to see your hands because it's a wonderful... We have one in the back. Bless you. Anybody else? I mean, this is a gift from God. I'm telling you, I write stuff down. My husband has this little book. I have to follow him around so we can remember where we put the book. We write it all down. I have to do this. And he still forgets. And then he wants to know where his book is. I mean, it's just a constant... It's a real joke in our house. Dad's book's in the bathroom, so you know what he was doing in the bathroom. He's going over his book, his schedule, and little things he needs to do, and, you know, but we've got it in the book now, so we're making progress. But I find that as I get older and as busy as I am, that I tend to forget things that are very, very important, and they cause a lot of problems when I forget them. You have to work at perverting, that's about it. You have to work at preserving something in your mind, or it leaves. You have an experience with someone, you go, you know, that was the most delightful, most exciting experience I've ever had in my life. I will never forget that feeling. 2 years later, you can't even remember who the person was. I mean, we have only been gone from Andover 7 months. And someone called me the other day who I was really close to, and I could not remember this person's name. It was frustrating with me. I worked with him every day. I know who the person was. I just couldn't remember their name. And that's what happens to all the good things. You say a swear word to a child, they get it right now. Boy, they've got that thing. But try to tell them something good. You have to repeat that thing and bring it around the block and back it up with a truck and, you know, really nail them down. So the good things are going to go with the flow, in one ear and out the other. All kids are alike. We're just big kids. God tells us these things. We're not stupid. You know right from wrong. I know right from wrong. But I think I know a little more than most people, so I can work this. No way. You make a right choice, and God's blessing will be on you. You make a wrong choice, and you just start that thing in motion. And the wheel will continue to spin. And the sad part is that it affects not just you. Oh, I love this when people say, please let me live my own life. Okay, then don't affect anybody else's. Nobody lives their own life. Let me make my own decisions. Where have we heard that, those of you that have older children? I'm a person too. Oh, well, that's wonderful. And how old do we want this person to live to be? Continue making decisions like that? And you'll go early. I've never understood. When they come to you, and I'm not talking about my children in particular or your children in particular, but young people. I've had a barrage of them coming through my office with some severe problems, not necessarily all children from this congregation. And they'll say, my life's a mess. And I'll say, well, what's the bottom line? Where do you think it all started? They'll say, well, I've been doing drugs for 6 years. I mean, these kids are 19, you know, and you're going... And they, you know, you're doing drugs. You are messing up your brains, and you don't understand why your life is failing. I mean, I'm walking around with all mine intact, and I'm not doing very well. I mean, do you get that feeling? So then you do drugs, and then they wonder why you won't let them live their own life. We affect each other. The congregation affects the pastor. The pastor affects the congregation. The families affect other families. Within your family, a husband affects a wife. A wife affects the children. It just goes on and on. I had a missionary friend. I love him. But sometimes I could wring his neck. He's so good as a missionary, but he has no common sense. Have you ever met somebody like that? They're really good in the spirit realm, but put them in life, and they just make one singer after another. And when we were overseas, he would come, and he'd sit there, and he'd go, I don't know why I can't catch on to life. So I gave him a few reasons, since he was asking. He was looking for a wife that would travel the mountains with him and go to the barrios and all this kind of stuff. And God sent over a MAPS worker who was ideal for him. Beautiful girl, dedicated, but she had common sense. Now I thought, that is going to really balance out. She went on all these things. You'd go out in the barrio, you wouldn't see anything that even resembled anything you're used to for 3 and 4 months at a time, and she was very good. And they traveled in teams, so there was lots of people. This MAPS team, there was a number of them that went. And on the travels, they came in contact with one another. And he fell in love with her. And I thought, God, you really are up there. You know, because he would just get so frustrated when he didn't have anybody and everybody else had somebody. And it gets lonely over there. So he would just move in with you for long periods of time. He would come unannounced and leave unannounced. And you never knew what he was going to do when he was there. But we loved him anyways. He's a lot of fun. So he asked this girl to marry him. I mean, I thought this would never happen. We all thought he was a confirmed bachelor. But we decided to help this relationship along. And I want to show you how we affect one another. She came down to minister at the Bible school and stay with us for a month. She did a series of teaching there, and she was excellent. And boy, we sat and we talked about this and that, and you know, and she, all these plans and everything. The missionary comes home on furlough. His mother dies. That's all he has, is this mother. So what happens to his emotions? They're just gone. She comes home a few weeks later because they were going to be married in about 4 weeks, and he calls the wedding off. He was 33, she was 30. We're not talking about teeny boppers here. Totally devastated this girl. For the last number of years, and I've made myself real clear, she's gone on to do other things with her life. He's still single. But he calls her just enough to keep her in constant turmoil. And one day, I had it with that. So I decided to tell him what common sense was. You either marry the girl or walk out of her life forever, but don't do this to this young lady. So he walks out of her life, the young lady. I mean, it was none of my business. I shouldn't have gotten involved. It's just, oh, what a tangled web we weave. I meant it for good. I really did. But you know, God has things in control. And when you start, and when it looks perfectly normal to you, and you give advice to other people about what they should do with their lives, I can't give advice anymore. I can take you to the Word. I can show you what happens in the Word. 20 years from now, you wouldn't remember that advice. You probably wouldn't even remember my name. But if you get the word, you'll remember that. You'll remember that. In the family, when you start making God's will decisions for other members of your family, you have to remember you're not God. And even if you can see that they're not making a good choice, the same God that directs you is the same God that contacts them. But isn't it hard to take our hands off and let God? Sometimes it even makes you angry, and you know me, I just tell you whatever's on my mind. It's not much, but when you've been instructing or teaching your children something and they're not getting it, and someone else comes along with the same information you've been programming them with for 5 years, and it comes as a brilliant revelation, and what happens to you? You really get upset. Where have you been? Wake up and smell the coffee. Mother has been telling you this. Dad has been telling you this. Where did you get this revelation? Oh, it was so glorious. And they begin unfolding this wonderful plan. And God spoke to me when we first let Michelle leave home. And he said, who do you care who gets the glory? Just as long as they learn the lesson. I contact you when you're all messed up. When you're not doing things right, I can contact her if she's not doing right. He said, as a matter of fact, I began speaking to your heart when you were four. Because we think, oh, well, they're not going to catch this. I mean, this is way beyond them. He said, I started dealing with you when you were four. We had a relationship. Okay, God, you really are sovereign. You really do care. I know he cares for you. The next verse. Preserve that wisdom and understanding and remember the words. Number 6, forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. We're talking about wisdom here. Wisdom is our principal thing. I'm going to move into 7. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get understanding. We're still talking about wisdom. By the time we finish Proverbs, you're going to know a lot about wisdom. You're going to have a lot of knowledge, and understanding will come. The beginning of wisdom is to get wisdom, to know that you need some help. Okay? A large part of good is the wish to become good. And a lot of people say, well, I want to do the right thing. I really do. But I don't feel worthy. Where did that thought come from? The devil's real bold with me. I suppose because I'm real bold with him. I know when he's directing an attack in my direction. I almost didn't marry my husband, not because I didn't love him. That was never a question in my mind. But because I didn't feel worthy to be a pastor's wife. I was illegitimate. I was raised in a home of alcoholics. Now, what kind of training is that to be a pastor's wife? It wasn't what I thought should be. I thought I should be raised in a Christian home with a mother and father who loved one another, who nurtured me, who did all the right things so that I could be prepared to be what God wanted me to be. But I knew God called my husband. And I knew God had called me, but I felt so unworthy. And it kind of surprised my husband. Because the thing he liked in me was the weakest thing, but it appeared to be my strength. He said, "Honey, you always seem to have it together. You always seem to know where you're going and how you're going to get there." I was the most lost person I knew. I was just struggling, hanging on by my fingernails, standing on my tiptoes, just hoping I was going to balance that thing. You don't know what's going on in someone else's heart and life. Because the devil was banging my head, telling me I was not worthy. And then he said, "My husband's background is worse than mine. Both of his parents didn't want him, gave him away. Someone else raised him. Was that God's choice? No. But he perfected that plan. He took that wrong decision, turned around, and glorified his name." You have to want to be good. It's a desire. You'll make one or two choices. If you feel unworthy, you will either try to do everything right, or you'll give up and do everything wrong. There's no middle of the road. There's no squeaking by. It's either forward or backward. But when you realize that no one is worthy, he is worthy, that really takes the responsibility off. And that we are created in his image. We have royal blood flowing through our brains, not just veins. You can get a good idea from God. You can get a good plan from God. But if the enemy can chip away at your self-esteem, you won't want to be good. I took it to the extreme where if I didn't get the top A in the class, I was crying. I mean, some parents would go, "If my kid got an A, I mean, we'd have to have a full blowout party." But that's how sensitive I was to wanting to be good. And I thought if I performed well, God would really love me and then I would be acceptable. But God doesn't love us on performance. He loves us unconditionally. It doesn't matter if we mess up everything. He doesn't love you any less or any more. If he has to spend more time getting you on the right track, it doesn't mean he loves you any more than before he did that. We don't gain God's approval by performance. And as parents, we have to be so careful that that isn't the way we raise our children. If you do well, I love you more. When our children were younger, there was a time that there was so much competition between them, like they were vying for first place with mom and dad. And can you top this type situation? And parents, you know, it goes on in every home. It's no new thing. And finally, I realized what the enemy was doing, bringing the spirit of competition into our home. And I sat them down. They were little. And I told them, I said, "Just because you do things and do them well does not mean it makes mom and dad love you more. We couldn't love you any more than we love you right now. And I even love you when you're naughty, but I don't like the things that you do when you're naughty." And Michelle says, Melinda's naughtier than I am. See, the devil was speaking right through that child in a cute little way, and we smiled, but it was the devil. We have to be in tune with God. I can't handle the responsibility of making these decisions, because I see what a poor job I do. I mean, I mean well, and we all do. But instruction comes from God through the Father to the Mother to the children. It's the way it is. I don't have a watch. What am I looking at for time here? Almost 10 till. I'll finish the seventh verse. And with all thy getting, get understanding. Getting, the purchase. No price is too high to pay for wisdom. No sacrifice is too great to pay for God's wisdom. I was thinking about my mother-in-law this week. She was my prayer partner, and we had such a wonderful relationship. I have to talk real quiet. I think I had a better relationship with my mother-in-law than my husband did. I spent more time with her because I was able to. And I really needed her this week. For three sets of circumstances I was involved in. And I was kind of resentful to God that he took her because I really needed her. She was a minister, so she understood the ministry, and she raised 13 children, God bless her. They were all chosen from the orphanage. I mean, she did this because she wanted to. I mean, it blew me away. I mean, after two, I said, oh, Lord, this is too much for me. But she raised 13 children, so she knows children. And I was dealing with someone else's children, and I thought, I'm away from that situation, but God, I don't know what to do. I don't even know what direction to lead them. And then God brought this to my mind. My mother-in-law is gone physically, but she is not gone from my memories. And he just kind of flipped through the pages of my memory and brought me back to a situation. And I went, that's it. You've heard the statement, after I'm gone, you will remember this day. I used to say, that's silly. That's not silly. You do. And God left this heritage, I'm talking about to the grandparents. Even though she's gone, the heritage of her ministry and counsel and prayers is still a mantle that rests on our family. And it will always be there. A very positive, great thing. A lot of times we'll sit at the table and we'll say, well, if Grandma's here, you wouldn't be doing that. Because Grandma would say. And we start to laugh, but then we think about that. And we might change our direction because of her influence in the family. So if you are grandparents, don't say, well, this didn't apply to me today. I'll just, you know. Godly parents become godly grandparents. And you have more wisdom when you are grandparents than you did when you were parents. And some of these grandparents are saying, yes, yes, use it. Use it. Fill those kids with God's precepts. Even after you're gone, he'll flip that through their memory and they will remember. And thank God that you are there, that you can do those things, that God has entrusted you with those people.